Thank you, Britt.
Hallelujah.
First of all, just a piece of business. We're needing to get out of the space early today. So how many of you have never, like, greeted me in the hug line after any service or given me any kind of love? I want you to please make sure you go through the hug line. I'll be out there after the service and give me some love. And for the rest of you who love me up all the time, it can't be a conversational thing today. It just needs to be a quick hug and move on. Some of you never really take that suggestion, so today I'm going to make sure that that suggestion is taken. When I was a kid in the 50s, one of the things about our house and a lot of houses there was we had a little black and white TV, and it got a couple of channels that we would watch. And our parents didn't really let us watch everything, but one thing that they did let us watch were Westerns. And this was questionable because we were in a Pentecostal church, and a lot of Pentecostals did not watch television at all. And if they did watch television, they definitely didn't watch Westerns because they were called shoot 'em up shows. But Mom and Dad felt that these Westerns that were on television in the 50s taught all of life's important lessons, that these shows actually were little mini sermons. And as we watched them, you could see that the writers would have the principal characters, the ones that you really liked and were rooting for, they were always about righteousness. They stood up tall and strong against prejudice. They stood up tall and strong against sexism. They stood up strong and tall against any kind of classism. The stories that they gave are truly, and they do reruns, and if you've never checked out 50s Western shows, you really should check it out because they are ministries. They are deep, deep ministries. And all of the shows but one that we watched were all fictional shows. They were written by people that were just writing up drama, and they wrote up some great drama. My favorite show in the 50s was Bonanza. I loved Bonanza because it had the Cartwrights, and there were several of them. And I had an enduring crush on Little Joe when I was a kid. And I never gave it up, actually. So I check out reruns of Bonanza, and if it's not featuring Little Joe, I just don't watch. It wasn't Michael Landon who played Little Joe, mind you. It was Little Joe. It was that character. That guy was so feisty. He could punch people out, and he could draw faster than any crook that came down the pike. And he was just a feisty guy, but he also was a very loving and protective guy. But that also was a fictional show. The only Western show that I'm aware of when I was a kid that was nonfiction was a show called Death Valley Days. Death Valley Days were true stories that were written from diaries and from other public accounts of what happened back then. One day, I was watching one of the programs on Death Valley Days with my brother. My brother Chuck was a year and a couple of months older than me. And we were watching alone. Everybody else was off doing whatever they were doing. It was wintertime when we were watching that show. And how we watched TV in the wintertime was that we would take one of our blankets and fold it in half and make a pallet on the floor in front of the television. And we would take the other person's blanket and we would cover ourselves up. We would lay on our bellies and our chins would be supported by our elbows and our hands, and we would be fixated. One of the shows was about a set of twins. They were young men, and they were identical twins. And these identical twins were living in pretty much abject poverty, and they were trying to scratch and scrape and hold on to their little farm that their father had left them, just a few acre farm. But eventually they lost it. And they felt that they had no other recourse than to do what many, many people were doing at that time, which was that they were heading to California or Alaska to mine for gold. They didn't have much, but they had enough after gathering whatever they had and selling off furniture and stuff like that. They had enough to get a mule, and they had enough to get a pickaxe and a shovel and other things that they would need for mining. At that time, you could just go out there and pretty much stake a claim somewhere where someone else hadn't pre-staked that claim. And they went out there. These were identical twins on the outside, but they were very different characters on the inside. One of the twins, he just wanted only so that he could give. Even when they were in poverty and they barely had enough food to eat, he would sneak and give someone with less a chicken or part of the apples or part of the potatoes. His twin brother, on the other hand, he wanted more so that he could have more. He just was in life for getting. Just that was his purpose, to get. And we know that if we are in life for getting, then we are not in life for giving. And we are only at peace when we are operating out of a consciousness of giving. Well, they went out, they made it to California, they got a claim, got a little piece of the mountain and got a claim, and they began their operation of trying to find some gold. And as we watched the show, days went by, weeks went by, and then months went by, and they were just getting more and more depleted, but they still were very much faithful. At some point, they did discover gold. Me and my brother were so happy. We were nudging each other, and we were just thinking that God is so good. They finally found some gold. And so they had a little cavern, a little cave, and they were like pickaxing all this gold out, and they were just so excited and thanking the Creator for this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to be rich. Once again, one of the twins wanted to be rich so that he could have more land, a big ranch, lots of cattle. He talked about how he would be the richest person in town. He would have the most clout than anybody in town. He would have power and authority. The other twin just talked about how much he would be able to bless the people in town, how he could give to the orphanage, how he could give to the library, how many other people. He didn't want a huge ranch for himself, but he thought that he might have a few acres and he also might be able to provide some acreage for others. His brother thought that he was crazy. How are you going to want to be rich just to give it away? Well, the upshot was that as they began to mine more gold, they would get loads of it and they would take it outside of the mine, outside of the mouth of the cave, and they were placing it there, and that's where the mule was. And at some point, they started like dynamiting to get more gold, and then there was more gold, and they took a load of that again outside of the cave. And at one point, the brother who wanted to give, who was in life for giving, decided, we have enough. Let's just load up the mule and let's go into town to the assayer's office and let's find out how rich we actually were. But his brother just wanted more. So he said, let's just do one more dynamite stick and let's get some more. And so he convinced his brother that that's what they should do. And he was supposed to put one dynamite stick in there. But he decided, I'll get more gold if I use two explosive devices. So he put two dynamite sticks in there, and it blew up half of the wall, and it ended up causing one of the beams to fall and trapped his brother under the beam. It also blocked the opening of the mine that they were in, and so they were just helpless. So the brother who was under the beam, he was stuck there. So his other brother went and said, let me see if I can find another way out for us. So he left the brother who was trapped under the beam, and he went off. And that rascal found another small way to get out of that cave. And instead of running back to tell his brother he had found a way out, he began to think of how much clout, how much authority, how much power he could have if he had all of the gold. And so he got himself out of that cave. He went around to the mouth. He loaded up the mule with more gold than he should have, and he was willing to let his brother stay in there and die. He got to town eventually, but he got to town in a different way than he thought he would. He had to cross a little patch of desert. He didn't have enough water for him and for the mule. So, of course, he had to survive, and he was given the mule little sips. Well, the mule couldn't make it. Plus, the mule was loaded down way too heavily in the first place. So as me and my brother Chuck are watching this show, as the guy is trying to get back to town, suddenly the weight of the gold breaks the back of the mule. The mule is now dead. This guy is really getting weak himself, but he still tries to shovel as much of the gold into his pockets as possible. And he had something similar to a backpack that he loaded down. We thought that surely he would die under that in the heat of that desert before he got to town, but he didn't. He eventually found some water in the desert, and he was able to make it in. He was so psyched. He ran into the assayer's office with his gold and put it down there to find out how rich he was. But after examining the gold that this guy had, the examiner went, "I'm sorry to tell you, but this is fool's gold. It looks like gold. It smells like gold. It tastes like gold. It shimmers like gold. It has the weight of gold. But brother man, it is not gold." Me and my brother looked at each other and went, "He killed his brother and a mule for nothing. He is not rich at all. He's more impoverished than he was before he started out, in fact." And we were just so about how could anyone, in the name of money, do that. Later on in the show, it shows someone staggering into town. And the man who has found out all he had is fool's gold is sitting on the bench outside of the assayer's office with his hands holding his faith, and he was weeping. I couldn't figure out whether he was weeping because he killed his brother or just weeping because he wasn't rich. They never did let us know. But the person who staggered into town, limping, was his brother. He had somehow made his way out from underneath that beam. He had seen, after searching, that there was another way out. And his brother not being there, he knew had taken the way out and left him. Going around to the front of the cavern, he could see that his brother had taken a substantial amount of the gold. He could all see that the mule was gone, and so he had just started his journey back home. When the brother, the greedy brother, the tight-fisted brother, the brother who was just here for getting and not for giving, glanced up when he heard someone approach, he saw his twin brother that he had left to die. One of those moments where they give you a dramatic pause, and we're wondering, what's going to happen? And me and Chuck are looking at each other. What's going to go down now? And what happened was that the brother who was here forgiving reached over and embraced his brother who left him to die and told him, "My love for you is as steady as a rock." And they wept in each other's arms. And that's when the show faded to black. And my brother looked at me and went, "I would never do nothing like that to you, Carly." And I went, "I sure hope not." I spoke to you last week about the eye of a needle and how a camel could not get through the gate that leads into the city of Jerusalem on its feet, burdened down by the owner's treasure, that the owner had to get that camel on its knees, and the owner had to unload the treasure before going into the city of Jerusalem. I reminded you that the metaphysical interpretation of the word city is consciousness. Salem is peace. So where this guy had to unload before getting into, he couldn't enter into the consciousness of peace. weighted down by all of his material goods. It is a lesson for me, and it is a lesson for everyone. I assigned you to spend the week thinking about, is there anything on your camel that is preventing you from getting in to the consciousness of peace? And as I thought about this fool's gold idea, I thought that of the same thing. That poor mule was weighted down with treasure, but it was only weighted down with treasure because its owner was weighted down in his mind with a need for more treasure. There's a scripture that says, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon the earth, where moths can get in and eat them, where they can rust, and where thieves can break in to steal. Lay up for yourselves heavenly treasures. Sometimes I've been counseling, asked somebody who was desperate to have more money, and I've been praying, and I've been visualizing, and I've been treasure mapping for more income, and it just hasn't happened. And I go, you want more income for what? I want more income so that I can have more left over when I pay after I've paid my bills. Okay, and what would more left over after you've paid your bills provide for you? It would provide security for me. I would know that I wasn't going to get kicked out of my apartment. I would know that I wasn't going to lose my phone. I wasn't going to lose my heat. And what would that give you, knowing that you won't lose your phone and you won't lose your place to live and you won't lose your heat? What would that give you? It would give me warmth, and it would give me light, and it would give me a shelter. And what would that give you? And they eventually get around to, it would give me peace of mind. And I go, that's what you want. You think you want money. You think you want a better, bigger house. You think you want all the little cute, sweet, shiny things this world has to offer. But what you really want, if you check it back to where it begins, all of the material things you want are things that you believe can provide you the one thing you really want. You want peace of mind. And you cannot enter into the gates of Jerusalem. You cannot enter into the consciousness of peace when you are burdened down with a load of material and experiential treasure. Many of us have different kinds of treasures, and I would ask us to look today to decide, what is the fool's gold that we are carrying? It looks like gold. It smells like gold. It tastes like gold. It's as heavy as gold. It's as shimmering and shiny as gold. But some of us are holding treasure that if you look close enough and give it a spiritual assaying yourself, you will discover that some of what you're loaded down with that is breaking your mule's back is just fool's gold. It's just earthly stuff. What we really want are treasures of heaven, treasures of Christ consciousness. We want things like peace of mind. We want things like a feeling of safety. We want things like a heart filled with love. We want things like a power and an assurance that will keep us, allow us to be like a tree planted by the living waters that the storms cannot knock over. We want to never again be like a reed shaking in the wind by every bit of news that comes on television and every bit of news that comes on the radio and every bit of news we read in the newspapers. We want to be like a tree standing by the living waters that can't be moved by what the doctor says or what the lawyer says or what the boss says or by the changing conditions of this world, where sometimes you seem to have something and sometimes you seem to lack something and sometimes you've got a job and sometimes you lose a job and sometimes you get an apartment and sometimes you get evicted from one. You want to be like a tree standing by the living waters that cannot be moved by your own monkey mind, by your own self-judgment. You want God. God is what you really want. And the deal about God Jesus already told us. That yoke is easy. That burden is light. It won't break your back, your mule's back, or your camel's back. I invite you to look for the fool's gold in your treasure box and to unload it. Sometimes somebody's treasure is that they are haughty and they are addicted to applause. Another person standing next to them is addicted to feeling pitiful and having people feel sorry for them and hiding out. Some people are addicted to speaking too much, and their call is to shut up. They're standing next to somebody whose call is to speak up because they never speak their truth. We all have different callings. What's in your treasure box is not the same thing that's in mine, unless, of course, we're talking about treasures that are not of the earth. Heavenly treasure is what you want. And the deal about it is you don't need a pick and a shovel, and you don't need a mule, and you don't have to travel your way to California or Alaska. You must simply close your eyes and breathe deeply and enter into the kingdom, queendom, moredom, alldom of God who resides within you. It's an easy trek. However, it has been called the longest distance to travel of all traveling you'll ever do. You will have to travel from your mind and into your heart. It looks like a distance of only maybe a foot and a half. But some people never take the journey. They're so busy journeying to Alaska and California looking for more earthly treasure that the moths can get at, that can rust, and that thieves can steal. When I got older, I thought that those twins were the same person, identical aspects of the same self. There is a you in you that lives only for giving. That is the truth of you. There is a false self in you that goes around calling itself by your name, and it's who you tend to think you are when you don't take enough time to plug into who you really are. And that false identity, that fake ID, that not you you, is here for getting. Giving. Give me more. Give me more, give me more, give me more, so I can hoard it, so I can hoard it. I have four friends who have so much money, it ain't funny. And they're scared to buy themselves a new pair of $50 shoes. And they go to church, and people who are making $200 are putting in $40, and them with all that money in the bank every Sunday, no matter who preaches and no matter what the person taking up the offering has to say, put in $10. You know why? They appear to be rich, but they're poverty-ridden in their consciousness. It's, I gotta keep it. I gotta hold on to it. There's also that group of people that puts $10 into the offering basket after they have dined to fullness at this food, this soul food that churches offer. They put in $10 because they're holding another $30 for some fake food at some restaurant that you eat and 3 hours later you're hungry for more. And they're approaching the staff of the churches and the ministers of the churches saying, I think I'd die without this ministry. That's not who they really are, but it's who they think they are. I've come to remind you that you are the twin who is here for giving. Sure, open up the windows of heaven. Thank you and give me more. Thank you. Give me more. There's nothing wrong with being open for more, but there is something amiss when you are open for more, for your selfish reasons, for your I'm going to hold on to this reasons. That's not who you are. And if you're being your fake self, if you're not being your authentic self, how can you ever enter into the city called Jerusalem, the consciousness of peace? It's not only your camel that needs to get on its knees. It's you. It's me. Going on your knees not to open your mouth to tell God what you want, but to open your mouth to thank God for all you have. You have everything. Immediate access to a field of infinite possibility to be and to become the true manifestation of the gold of God. Lay not for your treasures upon the earth where thieves can get them and moths can get them and rust can get at them. Lay you up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Peace, love, light, service, to be the light of the world, because that's who you really are. God is in heaven. Heaven is in you. Holy is your name. God wants you to know you have nothing to fear, and there is nothing and no one to blame. You've been informed. Your captivity is over. You've been informed. In truth, you're free. And so it is. Peace! We allow ourselves to breathe deeply and enter into the sacred, secret place of the Most High. That sacred, secret place is within us, deep within our heart, mind. We allow ourselves to just acknowledge right now how blessed we are, how much heavenly treasure we have available to us. In any moment we choose to realize it. We remember together that the Aramaic word for I am so blessed, or you are so blessed, or we are so blessed, is tuvaihun. Tuvaihun are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Tuvaihun are those who mourn. They will be comforted. Tuvaihun to those of us who have been lied on, talked about, cheated, and mistreated, for we shall be called the children of peace itself. As we breathe deeply and gently, we remember that we can never get outside of our blessings. And though appearances may change in the outer, and although it may appear in the outer that we are the recipients of lack and limitation, this is never true. Just an opportunity for some of us to come to an understanding, a feeling understanding, that though my earthly treasures may be limited, they are not my true treasures. I can breathe peace. The kingdom, queendom, wardom, alldom of God is within me. I can release it into my mind, into my heart, and into my world. So I unload in this moment as I breathe, letting go of any fool's gold, that I might be the recipient of gold that is real. This true gold is my Christ consciousness and my opportunity to be here for giving.
Between yesterday.